This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy's Booksplode. This month, Doctor Strange the Oath by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. Hey everybody, you're listening to another iFanboy Booksplode. My name is Paul Montgomery. That over there, Mr. Timmy Wood.
Hello!
Hey Timmy.
Hey, how you doing, Paul? It's been a while since I've been on the Booksplode.
Yeah.
Explode, sorry. I think it was what? Hulk? Planet Hulk?
Yeah.
So if you never listened to that one, go back and download and listen to it.
And we got big plans for Booksplode in 2014. So stick around. But anyways, one of the big, exciting surprise books of 2013 was The Private Eye, which is like, it just came out one day. It wasn't even a Wednesday. I was like, what is this? It's Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. And you knew it was going to be good, first of all, because Brian K. Vaughan, but then also because Marcos Martin. And that, from when I came back into comics as an adult, back in, you know, around 2006, this book was coming out, Doctor Strange the Oath. And it's a mini series that it's 5 issues. As I said, it started in December 2006, so 7 years ago, ended in April 2007. Brian K. Vaughan, pencils by Marcos Martin, inked by Alvaro Lopez, letters by Willie Schubert, and colors by Javier Rodriguez. And I'm just noticing now the Wikipedia entry is wrong because I was about to say Javier Rodriguez did the letters, he did the colors. So Wikipedia, get your shit together. Doctor Strange the Oath. If someone is interested in Doctor Strange, I say go read Doctor Strange the Oath.
And that's kind of this is not a slight against the book, but that kind of makes me sad that it's almost the only. I was thinking about this today. It seems to be the only Doctor Strange book you can really send someone to, right?
You can send people, you know, to like runs and stuff. And there are smaller stories, but this is one, it's all self-contained. I think that's the appeal to it. And a lot of people love Brian K. Vaughan. So I think it's just easy. And it's sort of, we had this conversation sort of with Planet Hulk as well, is that it's a self-contained thing. You can get it all in one collection and everything's there. You don't really need to read anything else. And all the other stuff is sort of runs.
In fact, they even go ahead and give you a little bit of a Doctor Strange origin in this story.
Yeah.
So even if you could even come at this not knowing anything about Doctor Strange, and you could leave knowing everything you probably really need to know.
Yeah.
Well, not,
I mean,
yeah,
for the sake of this story, at least. And I mean, so you open this up and you're like, oh, he's House, right? I mean, he's sort of like Dr. House. He's this huge jerk. He was this hotshot surgeon, And he was only, he wasn't interested. This was not Mother Teresa. This was a guy who was very interested in playing golf and making house calls to the patients who could afford to
making
pay
that
for
money.
House calls.
Making that money, money, money.
Like cash money, exactly.
And they don't. It's funny how so many Marvel characters have a origin that pits their selves pre superhero days as kind of selfish, kind of a jerk. But after reading this, I feel like Stephen Strange might be the biggest jerk of them all. I'd forgotten that he was like as cold hearted as he was in the beginning of his career.
Revisiting this. That was sort of my biggest takeaway. Was it other than it's like this is a really simple story, much more streamlined of a story than I'd even remembered when I read it first as single issues. But also that they laid on really thick. He was an asshole. he'd be
the bad guy in any movie about hospitals. Any movie about hospitals, this guy's the bad guy.
Yeah,
the villain. He won't do. He sends away people because they don't have insurance. He doesn't care about helping people. He only cares about, you know, doing surgeries for rich politicians or pop stars or, you know. And it's. I was thinking. I was like, wow. Like, you know, Iron Man. He's kind of a selfish guy. Peter Parker had his selfish moments here and there. But this one, I think, he's the most selfish one of all.
I think Tony Stark is a good example. Like he's a really selfish, self-absorbed kind of guy, but he was sort of like playing up the playboy kind of role with Stephen Strange. He's just like outwardly callous. Just like, do you even realize what you're saying? There's almost an element of mustache twirling to how callous he is and how petty he is and being totally upfront with, I'm not interested in helping out this guy who is beloved in Greenwich Village who doesn't have any money. I don't care that he deserves to be helped. I care that he doesn't have money to be helped.
Yeah.
That's also my criticism of the book, which I love this miniseries, but if there's anything, they kind of laid on really thick that he was a jerk. But that also sets up the fact that he has villains. He has these nemeses that stem from his life before he's a superhero. And I think you raise a good point that a lot of characters, they become a superhero and sort of their mission statement comes out of whatever that catalyst is that changes them, that gives them their powers. With Stephen Strange, he really needed this. He kind of needed to go on this journey to become a better person. And a lot of what he does is, it's sort of a penance for the Scrooge that he was before.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it pretty engrossing. It's a really interesting character. I just wish they kind of dialed it back a little bit. The storytelling isn't quite as nuanced as more recent Brian K. Vaughan stuff like Saga or like, you know, Private Eye, which I think they've both grown.
Yeah, Marcus Martin had done a few works. It's funny, if you look at the back, his works that are credited to him are Captain America and Batgirl Year One.
Yeah.
Which are two books I think everyone kind of forgot that he even did. This book came out and people were like, hey, this is a cool book. And then Martin disappeared for a little bit and then kind of wowed everyone again when he came back and did the new day Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, that too. That and also Daredevil, I think, was big for for him.
Absolutely. You're right.
He did kind of. Just for me, in terms of what I was reading, like he fell off the map a little bit. And I'd read The Oath, and I think I went back and I'd read Batgirl Year One, and that's one of my favorite all time stories. It's one of those things when people are like, you know, if you could do a DC animated feature, you know, what should they adapt? And that's my number one pick, and never going to happen. But anyways, you're right. He's one of those guys that fell off the map for a little bit and then came back in a big, big way.
But I think though, like, even though like, I wouldn't say this is his greatest work because he keeps getting better and better as he works in the industry. Like, it just still was really good. And at the time, I don't remember, one of the appeals was there weren't many books that looked like this.
No.
like this, he has clearly a Ditko, which is probably why he was chosen mm-hmm. for this project. He's a Ditko style. And I'm trying to think of what else was on the market at the time, but I think it was like a lot of, you know, responses and to Civil War or, you know, Sinestro Core War, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like nothing, everything either had like a McNiven or a, what's the guy who did, even Ethan Van Sciver type sure. look to them.
Yeah.
And then at the time when this came out, this was a refreshing book. On the stands, I felt like.
Yeah, I think Ditko is sort of on the nose. I think that's definitely a frame of reference. It's not that he's doing like a pastiche of that, but
no.
But yeah, you definitely feel that that sense of amazing of old amazing Spider-Man aesthetic, and that feels really comfortable and like going home in a way for a Marvel comic, and. With Marvel now, I think there are a lot of comics that are embracing this kind of yeah. look and this kind of storytelling style. Obviously, I mean, he was there with Daredevil, which was just pre-Marvel now. But I think, you know, right from the opening scene where you've got Arana and Iron Fist in the waiting room of the Night Nurse.
Yeah. As soon as I read that first page, when I remember when this came out, I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna like this book."
Yeah, it's a very like thinking of the definition of street level Marvel, and thinking about well, what happens when the superheroes do get injured, and of course the Night Nurse is a pre-existing character, but who would think to use her as a major character in a story like this? And it just feels like a very solid, watertight setup. And I mean, I was talking earlier about how it just feels very simple. You don't need to know anything going into this. They do give you the origin and they remind you each issue. There's actually, they've included sort of the sort of the refreshers at the head of each issue explaining what had happened in the previous one. And I like that each time it's different.
Yeah.
It's the Eye of Agamotto for the second issue, and then for the third issue, it's like in a some kind of arcane spell book, and then later it's one of the Night Nurse's medical forms, and they're funny, and I think it's a fun approach, top down in terms of doing a fun superhero book, where it's even the page at the beginning that tells you what happened last time. Is something out of the story.
So, Paul, I have to ask you now. Yeah. Before you read this, were you already a fan of Doctor Strange? Like, did you like him a lot, or was this what kind of, or would you even say you're a fan now? What are your thoughts on the Strange Doctor?
Yeah, well, it's 7 years ago. I just for me, Doctor Strange was just sort of a visual. I didn't really know anything about Doctor Strange. But I've always liked, you know, magic and, you know, wizards and fantasy and stuff. So I think I had it in me to be at least curious about Doctor Strange. And I kind of like that he's a dick. I kind of like that he's not a goody-two-shoes kind of superhero. And he can't, even now, even though he's sort of reformed and has learned his lesson, there's still that arrogance to him. And I like that about him. How about you?
I did like Doctor Strange a lot. I mean, I hadn't read a lot of them, but I was a big fan of the Defenders. I think they're still probably my favorite team, my favorite Marvel team. And him, like that, just that foursome of him, the Hulk, Silver Surfer, and Namor.
Namor.
I think it's just like a fun like dynamic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go and buy the back when they were doing. I guess they're not doing them anymore. The Essentials. I started buying the Essentials of the Defenders, and I think they're one of the. I feel like so many people bought those Essentials when they came out, and they just ended up kind of just sitting on your shelf and not being read.
Right.
But the Defenders ones, I ended up reading. I think almost all the way up to the Steve Gerber years, mm-hmm. which then they get super weird and wacky and a lot of fun all over again. But so I did like Doctor Strange a lot, and I always felt like it was weird that he, especially in this time, this is pre the Bendis New Avengers magic. Run where he started popping up a lot again.
Yeah.
I always thought it was interesting that he never seemed to really come around that much. And this was when I returned to comics maybe a couple of years previously. Mm-hmm. Like I returned maybe around 2002, I guess. And so I was very excited when this came out, and I was very satisfied with it as well. But I still think also, like, there has to be more. Did this not sell? Because I remember when this came out, I feel like everyone was talking about it, and it's a great book. And then there's still never a Doctor Strange book that comes out ever. I don't know.
I think, well, they you know, it's interesting that in this story, he says, and that's why I never joined the Avengers. Yeah. Of course, later on, Bendis picked him up for the Avengers and did all that stuff where he wasn't a Sorcerer Supreme anymore. And yeah. That went to, I know you're a big Dr. Voodoo fan.
I did like Dr. Voodoo as well. I like a lot of the magic characters in both DC and Marvel.
Yeah. And, you know, and then now he's part of the Illuminati and played a pretty considerable part in Infinity. So it's, you know, I don't know, I guess... You know, Mark Waid did some stuff when he wasn't the Sorcerer Supreme. They always talk about. I remember, you know, all those conversations early on about if every writer sort of has like a Doctor Strange story in their head or wants to play around with that character. I don't hear that so much anymore.
I remember you'd listen to interviews and they'd always say. People would always talk about that Doctor Strange is one of their favorite characters, and then they'd be like, well, his books just don't sell, or he can't support a solo series. And then I was thinking today as I was reading this, I was like, when's the last time he's had a solo series? Like the late 90s maybe? You know,
meanwhile... I think all the recent stuff has just been limited series and then using them on team books. And
but even then, this is the only limited series I think that he's ever... that's ever been a Doctor Strange. Like there's this one and there's a Straczynski one. That was like a Marvel Knights book that I think came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in recent years, definitely. I mean, it's... right. I mean...
I just think it's crazy how Moon Knight seems to get a new book every 5 years. We can't get one Doctor Strange book when it's such a great character that people love. I don't know.
I think, you know, the backup in this, there's a four-page story that was, I guess, like a digital comic that came with the Doctor Strange animated feature DVD, and that to me, even though it's a short story, I was like, I want more of that. Like, I want more episodic Doctor Strange adventures. It would be a lot of fun.
Comics is kind of drifting more towards the, I guess what's being called the Hellboy or BPRD format, where you're just as opposed to having a long running,
an ongoing series of limited series. Yeah,
exactly. And I always thought. That's a great idea. Anyways, I've never understood the idea of wanting series to keep going to the triple digits. But that's Doctor Strange is the perfect character to do that with because, like, there are tons of Doctor Strange stories that people want to tell. And like, you have someone on the book, they tell their story, the next person comes on, tells theirs. I don't know. There's a lot of characters like that in Marvel's history that they'll have a book, they'll come out, the book is really successful, and then the book ends and it's just decided they're done. Iron Fist, I feel like, is the same way. Iron Fist book was amazing. And then when it was over, and granted, like, no one wants to follow up an amazing run by anybody else, but I still think, as opposed to constantly giving us, you know, I mean, this is for, you know, movie reasons too, like, constantly giving us more War Machine books, I'd prefer just more Doctor Strange or Iron Fist or... I don't know.
Well, why do you think it is? Why do you think Doctor Strange doesn't get, you know?
Well, I think it's less of a sales. Well, not less of a sales thing. I think it's an idea that magic, it's hard. You can view Zatanna in the same way. With magic, it's hard to decide what the rules are for these characters.
Which is a plot point in the book. I mean,
exactly.
Brigand, who's he's written sort of like a Flash rogue. He's, you know, a very blue collar kind of villain.
Oh, he is like a Flash rogue. You're right.
And I love villains like that. That are just like he's just a villain for hire, and he, you know, comes in and he has Hitler's gun. He has the pistol that Hitler used allegedly to kill himself. The Walther P-38. And so that's enchanted. It's like a cursed gun with a silver bullet, which is, you know, a cool idea, a fun idea, especially for, you know, a grunt kind of villain like Brigand. So I thought that was a, you know, a great role for that character, great choice. You don't have to have an over-the-top
Was Brigand originally created for this book? I'm assuming he was.
I'm showing my ignorance here. I imagine he probably predates this. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like if they brought Night Nurse out of the toy box, I wouldn't be surprised if Brigand was also an old Ditko villain or something.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But so you have this character saying, you know, facing off against Stephen Strange, and she's, oh, I hate magic. You know, there's you never know what the rules are, which is, you know, a bit of meta commentary. And the final showdown in this book, spoiler alert, is, you know, the sorcerer who's up against Doctor Strange, who turns out to be the guy who did the surgery on him that actually botched the nerves in his hand, gave him nerve damage, or didn't heal his nerve damage after the car accident so that he couldn't be a surgeon anymore. Nicodemus West. Yeah, Dr. Nicodemus West. He summons this hourglass, and the hourglass, when you turn it over, means that neither of them in this duel will be able to use magic for the next like 3 minutes or whatever. So he came up with this solution. And Brian K. Vaughan, I mean, came up with the solution to have a conclusion that isn't the end of the Sword and the Stone.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of superhero stories come down to this bad guy fights this good guy. And I guess with a magic character, it can be a lot of just summoning things out of thin air. But arguably, Green Lantern, you could say, has his power is not too dissimilar to many magic characters' powers. Like, it's based in science, but because it has simple rules that everyone knows, it just creates a construct. It doesn't work on certain things for whatever reason. And then Doctor Strange is all ethereal. It's not as popular of a character, so it's in the like common knowledge of everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's part of it. Like, writers, it's hard to write a Doctor Strange story because technically he should be able to do almost anything, so it's hard to find a good foe or challenge for him. And then people who are kind of half in, half out, maybe aren't interested because they just feel like there's no set rules, in the same way that even though the Hulk, who has rules that seem to fluctuate, has set rules.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah, it's tough because like you go throughout this story, and he has to pause all these moments, Doctor Strange, and explain that I can't conjure up surgical instruments. They come up with kind of an elegant system where they say that, you know, magic can't duplicate medicine, and medicine can't duplicate magic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of when you come up with sort of like a core rule system like that, like an absolute like that, that those two things don't cross over. That's pretty elegant and that's pretty simple and easy to remember. But then you constantly have to find these things. Well, why don't you do this? And, you know, why can't you help Wong with this thing, you know, in this way? And so I can understand that having to do that over time. Maybe you could come up with a, you know, more of a shorthand so that it kind of sucks that you have to keep reminding people that, you know, you can't do this with magic. You can only do this. And you have to come up with to create a dramatic action scene that isn't, you know, the end of the Sword and the Stone. You have to come up with an hourglass that cuts out magic from the equation entirely.
But you know what's funny is that, like, as you were saying that, I was just reminded of Hellblazer. Mm-hmm. And how that's a very long-running series that found ways to do it every time, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So it's just I don't know, it's just, I think it's a lot of these C-list and D-list characters have their fans, but for some reason, Marvel has decided that they aren't strong enough to carry a book. And they're probably very right. There's a lot of books that I loved starring non-A-list characters that failed because they didn't have the market that I thought they did. Not everyone was like a Timmy Wood or Paul Montgomery in the comics buying market is what we learned quickly.
So I don't know. I hope, you know, next month they could announce, you know, a new ongoing Doctor Strange book. we would be, you know, the first in line to pick that up. But
yes.
So, you know, it could happen. Just wish it happened sooner. But sorry, so this book. What did you like about this story?
What I liked about the story too is I feel like it really plays up everything about being a doctor. And like I feel like a lot of times that's dropped with Doctor Strange. They just focus so much on the mystic arcs and his role in occult type stuff that it kind of, sometimes I even forget that he was originally a surgeon predating all this.
Exactly.
And I even thought about that as I was reading this because it's been a while since I read it. He, you know, becomes Doctor Strange because he, you know, drives his car into a tree and he ends up not being able to do surgery anymore and his hands like shake. And I thought like, man, do we ever see that happen now? Like, and then like the next page it happened, he's holding a bottle of pills and his hands are shaking and he can't, you know, hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's one thing I really like about it is that it really plays up his past and how that influences his actions of a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we see in a lot of other characters like Daredevil or Spider-Man, but not so many in others. I think the end of it is a true conundrum. Like it's an interesting predicament that he finds himself in, and it's a question of did he make the right decision or is there a right decision in that conclusion?
Yeah, there's it's called Doctor Strange the Oath, and you know another book with that title like the Oath part could just be placeholder. It sounds cool. It sounds arcane and mystical. But the oath actually refers to the Hippocratic Oath. And he brings that up. And I sort of forgot about that. And when I was reading it again, I was like, oh, yeah, that's really – it's a really great insight on Brian K. Vaughan's part to think about, as you said, the two kinds of doctors that he is. Because he was trained to be, this truly world-class surgeon – and if he wasn't such a prick about it, he could have saved a lot of people. He saves people in different ways now, protecting them from like the netherworld and everything. But so this conundrum that you mentioned is that the central conceit is that that Wong, his manservant, his apprentice, has terminal brain cancer, and he's got like 3 months to live. Something like that. And Doctor Strange goes into another dimension and basically kills a cat god in order to get the serum just to help Wong and his cancer. It turns out that this could basically cure all cancer in the world if they're able to mass produce this or make more of this.
Not even all disease, period.
It starts off as all cancer, and then we learn gradually that it's like all kinds of illnesses and the bad guys bring up, some interesting points, even though they're sort of just out for their own bottom line. They say that, if everybody was cured and there was no disease, then there would be overpopulation problems and be even worse than square one. So, but it ends up being this conundrum of there's one drop of this stuff left. Do I save Wong, who needs this right now, or do I hold on to this drop and try to make more of it and help the whole world except for Wong, who will already be dead by then? And he's reminded that, Wong is his patient right now, and he swore an oath that he should help and do everything in his power to save the patient on the table. And of course, Wong is his longtime friend and saved his life many times. And so he makes the choice to save Wong, of course. I guess he could always go out and kill another cat god and get some more of that, serum.
It did seem very easy to get a hold of that stuff.
Well, his shirt was all ripped up and everything. He had a rough time of it. It was just all off camera.
Yeah.
It's sort of a big kind of MacGuffin sort of thing. This elixir that can cure all cancer. It's also the end of the first issue. Realizing that he can cure cancer, it's a classic Brian K. Vaughan cliffhanger. But you know, I think it's more about what does it mean to be a good doctor? You know, these important relationships, like a great insight into, you know, taking Wong, who could be the sort of racial stereotype and this sort of thankless character in earlier Doctor Strange stories, and making him this great friend whose devotion isn't because he's simple or stupid. It's because what Doctor Strange is doing is very important. And, you know, Wong talks about his cousin who's training to be, you know, an assistant to a Sorcerer Supreme. And this is a very important role for someone to have, a very important mantle to bear. Yeah. And I like the point where Strange reveals that he's not this, you know, infirm old man who can't handle himself in a physical fight just because he has all these, you know, magic powers. He hasn't let that fall into the wayside. And Wong is, in fact, his master in terms of martial arts. And he's got some judo that he learned from Wong. Although he says that he'll never be Iron Fist, but it'll, you know, it'll do the trick. So I really like the depiction of that relationship. And Wong gets to be kind of a badass, even though he's suffering from, you know, this cancer and is weak. There's that moment where they're surrounded by these guys in Chinatown, and he says, you know, they said, you know, you better give us your best. And he said, I'd never do any less. Yeah. It's a pretty awesome moment.
Another thing I really like about it too is I like the villain. I like that initially you think it's going to be, or not initially, but they kind of play up that you think it could be Nightmare or Dormammu, or am I right. saying that right? Is it Dormammu?
Dormammu? I would say Dormammu, but I could be
Dormammu,
wrong.
Or any of these magic foes that he has. But the villain, again, this is a spoiler. I'm sorry if you've not read this, but is a fellow doctor. Fellow surgeon that just has a different set of ideals than he does, or has a different allegiance, I would say, actually. And he's not like, I guess he's a bad guy in a sense, but he's not bad in the way that Dr. Doom is bad.
Yeah.
And it's just like an interesting, I thought that was interesting. That's another reason why I really like the book.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, it kind of hurts him that he's, you know, in the pocket of big pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
But you know, for the short amount of issues, you know, there's some nuance to what he's trying to do. And they clearly set up that there's reason for people to have a grudge against Doctor Strange from what he was before.
Yeah.
So
he also has two different colored eyeballs.
He does.
Which I always think is
it's interesting. It's sort of like the, you know, using that as he's got this weird thing, this weird stigma about it, the way a lot of fiction uses like albinos, like the evil albino kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, back when Dr. Strange met him, he pointed that fact out like immediately. He was immediately prejudiced towards his two different eye colors.
Yeah.
How about Night Nurse? What's interesting is that early on in this story, I'm thinking, oh wow, okay, so they're setting it up that Doctor Strange is very much like a Sherlock kind of character, and we're like, okay, that makes Wong Watson, right? Because he's, you know, his helper and everything, and they work on these cases together, and you see Wong, you know, organizing the reports of their investigations in their library. But then we meet Night Nurse, and Night Nurse becomes Watson. They actually have this running gag where she calls him Sherlock and he calls her Watson. And there's even an elementary at some point in the story.
Yeah.
I really like that relationship. And I think that so much of this is sort of about the potential for an ongoing series.
That's the thing is like,
I want more of this.
This book must have not done well. Cause like, it's set up for a ongoing series at the end,
mm-hmm.
with Night Nurse gets, you know, set on fire, so she moves into Doctor Strange's inner
sanctum sanctorum,
and he offers her, you know, a place there to take care of people, and they kiss at the end. It's very, very sweet,
mm-hmm.
and Yeah, it just seems like the next move would be to see what the next adventure would be between this trio of heroes, and then it's over, and we don't see Doctor Strange again until Hulk breaks his hands in Planet Hulk,
you know,
or World War Hulk, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I know that he's already, you know, done some stuff with a depowered Doctor Strange, but if Mark Waid ever got tired of Daredevil or the Indestructible Hulk, he should do Doctor Strange stories.
Yeah,
totally. Because I don't think Brian K. Vaughan's coming back to do, you know, an ongoing Marvel series. But I think, you know, if you had somebody like Mark Waid, I think they would understand the dynamic, you know, the relationships. And I don't know that they wouldn't go back 7 years and use this as their status quo. But, you know, it's not so far removed from where we are now. I think we've sort of circled back around, and you know, you could do a Doctor Strange series that's, you know, using these trappings, and I think that would be a whole lot of fun.
And it's so smart to bring, like, I knew of Night Nurse, like I knew she existed because you would see those old covers from, you know, Marvel back when they had more than superhero comics, and one of them that always kind of pops up is the Night Nurse one.
Yeah, she's from like the 70s basically.
Yeah, it was like more of a romance comic almost, I think, right? And so I kind of knew she existed. So when I saw that she was in this, when it came out, it got me excited that, oh, that's awesome that they're using these characters that they have access to, as opposed to, and making something interesting out of them. Like I would love this. I'm sure she's popped up since. I think I have seen her a couple times since, or I think she's referred to a lot. Like someone gets hurt and someone says, go see Night Nurse. You know, she'll patch you right up.
She was in Bendis's Daredevil.
That
predates this, but and there have been different characters with that Night Nurse name.
Yeah.
She was in New Avengers number 34. She's Linda Carter. But I think, you know, the breakout role was probably Doctor Strange of the Oath. And I was wrong. Brigand was created solely for this.
Okay.
He just, and I think that's sort of the brilliance of it, that he seems like he's been around. He just feels like an old Marvel character, like, you know, like he would have been in the circus with Hawkeye or something.
Yeah. I just lost my, what was about to say. Oh, I feel like it's just, Night Nurse is just such a good idea for a character. Remember like last year there was that show coming out called The Mob Doctor?
Mm-hmm.
It's like that, like someone has to take care of these people. I want to know who that is. You know, they can't be going to hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in the same way that Daredevil is the lawyer for every person in the Marvel Universe, Night Nurse is everyone's doctor or nurse practitioner.
It's a cool idea as like a nexus for stories. Like, so like with that first page of this limited series, to have Iron Fist and Arana meet there, and they've never necessarily met before. And she talks about how she was, you know, involved in a fight and she didn't even know what the bad guy's name was. And Iron Fist had to fill her in on that. And she said, you know, Spider-Man swept in and, you know, saved my ass and then gave me a card and told me to go here and get things taken care of. And,
so that means Spider-Man has pockets, right?
Does he say he has a card? I don't know. I might be.
Just, maybe.
I don't know. But he's a very talented seamstress. Is Peter Parker. So mostly we've been complaining that there isn't more of this, but for what there is, it's a really good little Doctor Strange story, and it's all self-contained. You don't need to know anything about Doctor Strange.
If you're a fan of Brian K. Vaughan and you wanted to see what he looks like when he mixes up in a mainstream universe, this is the one I think to go to. He's great. That's the thing that proves how great he is. He's great at books like Why the Last Man or Ex Machina or Scalped. Saga, not Scalped. That's right. Jason Aaron. But then like you see him every now and then jump in here and do these little mini series like he would do. And he's great at those too. Great writer.
And I mean, Marcos Martin drawing Doctor Strange casual wear. And there's nothing really that casual about Doctor Strange. He's a very fabulous person.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got like leopard print gloves.
He's ridiculously similar to Iron Man. When I was thinking about that today. He was rich. He had a downfall. He hurt himself. He has a servant that works for him. He has a mustache with dark hair. Like, there's a lot of similarities there.
When you think about, you know, Tony Stark, even, you know, today, and the same for Stephen Strange, you think of that, like, old Hollywood, you think of, like, Clark Gable, and that's clearly where they're going with this character.
I feel like if they made a Doctor Strange movie, Errol Flynn would be Doctor Strange.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be tough now because he's dead, but...
Yeah. No, they would reanimate his corpse. They'd be so magical about it.
And it would be really distressing for children going to the movies saying, why are there jumper cables hanging off of him? What's going on? I do think
one of these Marvel films they're planning has to be a Doctor Strange film.
There's rumors to that effect.
Yeah, it's always brought up. It's always a rumor. They're always saying so-and-so may be cast as Doctor Strange, whether it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt or... There's another one recently.
This was years ago, but they were talking about, like, McDreamy wanted to do it.
Oh, wow. I guess that, the Grey's Anatomy angle. I can see that.
Yeah. Patrick Dempsey.
When that movie gets made, which it will get made one of these days, we will get a Doctor Strange book again, definitely.
That's how
the system works. And then we will finally have our dream Doctor Strange book. I would just love a lot of these magic characters to get like a book. I love Doctor Strange. I love the Son of Satan.
Get a Son of Satan book.
Look, I have a great idea for a Son of Satan book.
Okay.
Make it a Marvel Max book. Okay. Here it is. Here's my pitch. My dorm room roommate is the Son of Satan. Bam. It'd be great. It'd be a great book.
I think that has a limited appeal because not everybody knows you and your roommate. So,
yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
But I don't know. All these magic characters have a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun characters in the magical world of the Marvel Universe. And every now and then you get books like this that kind of exploit them in the right way. And they should be cherished and brought up to people who haven't read them yet. So if you haven't read this, go find it and read it.
You know what? The Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be a kind of a hurdle in terms of suspension of disbelief for audiences in the ever expanding Marvel Cinematic Universe. Magic is going to be the hurdle after that. You know, I think they're tackling the cosmic stuff now. Magic is scary. You know, that's introducing a whole other element into all this. But I guess we'll see some of that with Scarlet Witch and
Avengers 2. They announced a lot of street level characters
for the Netflix stuff.
Right. So Doctor Strange, you wouldn't consider him street level. You wouldn't consider him cosmic, and you wouldn't consider him like Avengers level either. I guess that's why they have
Loki, and Loki knows magic. And I think you should tie all these things. And that's interesting because when you're flipping through this book and you go into Brigand's mind and all of these villains that he sort of created that sort of scapegoats for his actual boss. You look at all the different Doctor Strange villains, and you've got Dormammu and Mordo and Doctor Doom's in there, and you see Loki in the background. And I was thinking about it. I was like, Loki is sort of like the key to a lot of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and linking all these things up. And they're already playing with, you know, Asgard is kind of, it's another planet. It's just a faraway planet, and all of the realms are connected. It's just a very, you know, instead of an interdimensional thing, they're just really far apart in outer space. And, you know, Loki knows his magic, and so you can play with that stuff. But anyways, we're getting way over over our heads here. So we recommend this book. We want to see, I'd like to, you know what, Doctor Strange book, cool. I want to see a Night Nurse book and get on that Doctor Strange movie
ASAP,
because BD Wong's not getting any younger. So,
oh man, BD Wong. What did I watch recently? He popped up in, maybe it was Jurassic Park.
Father of the Bride Part 2. It's great. It's a great film.
It's a great book. Marvel, give us more of this stuff. I guess Marvel has lately given us more stuff like this. I'd say Daredevil's like this. If you like Daredevil, read this. If you like, if you like Hawkeye, even, I would suggest read this, maybe.
If you like books, check this out.
If you like transferences of information via paper and binding, read this.
All right. And the other thing, if you're interested in keeping up with Booksplode, in January 2014, we're going to be talking about Akira. I don't know if we're going to do there. Now there's like six volumes of that. I don't know if we're going to do it all in one shot. I have a special guest lined up.
It is not me. I'll
it's
tell you that
it's
right
not
now.
Timmy Wood.
So you can cross me off the list. I know you're like, oh.
But Timmy will be back in 2014. So we're going to be talking about Akira in some form in January, maybe beyond. So that's next on Booksplode. Remember, of course, to check out every week the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast over at ifanboy.com. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can send those along to paul@ifanboy.com or contact@ifanboy.com. Remember to leave some love on the iTunes. Leave us an iTunes review. And I'm Paul.
Write it as if you're a magician. If you heard this show, write it as if you were Doctor Strange.
That's right. Give them creative writing prompts.
Here's your prompt. Your suggestion is hoary host of Hogarth. Hogarth. Hogarth.
Until next time, happy holidays. I'm Paul. That's Timmy.
Yes. I thought I was going to say I'm Timmy Woods.
You don't get to say that. See you next time. Abracadabra.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.